Welcome back to Demand Gen Chat. I'm your host, Tara Robertson, head of Demand Gen at Chili Piper. In this episode, I'm joined by Silvio Perez, founder of Ad Conversion. Silvio was previously at Metadata for a couple of years where he got a ton of exposure to the paid programs of other B2B companies. We spoke about a few paid strategies he learned in his time there and why he thinks B2B marketers should be putting more of a focus on their retargeting audiences than list building. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Silvio. Silvio, so excited to have you on Demand Gen Chat. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Tara. I'm so excited to be here.
So excited to catch up. We talked a little bit when you were back at Metadata, so now you're doing your own thing. Let's just start off with something fun. What's a marketing hot take that you want to share with our audience?
I have one that comes to mind that always ruffles feathers. And essentially, it's that a remarketing audience is equally important, potentially more important than an email list. And I know a lot of people hear that and they kind of lose their mind. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have an email list. Obviously, you should. You have to make sure that you own your database, your contacts. Mm-hmm. But the challenge with just relying on an email list is if your average open rate is between 20 and 40%, you know, that means 80 to 60% of the people are never going to actually see your emails. And then the other challenge too with building an email list versus building a remarketing audience is depending on the average opt-in cost per lead. And I've looked into a lot of B2B SaaS companies, and there are people who are paying $250 plus just for gated content leads. And you compare that to a remarketing audience where I literally tested this on Facebook video views. This is where I was like, everything switched for me. I ran this experiment where I had one of my YouTube videos, it's 24 minutes long, and I promoted it through Facebook video views. And I paid like 69 cents to get somebody to watch 100% of a 24 minute video. Just blew my mind. And ever since then,
wow,
the value of a retargeting audience has weighed more heavily for me. Definitely do both, but in terms of what you lead for, I definitely think leading with, and this is where we're seeing too in terms of like the shift towards ungated content, content consumption, promoting things in feed. But I think that's going to become even more important post-2024 when Google removes third-party cookies. This is the counter argument people always make to me. They're like, well, I need the database and then I can upload it and I can use lookalike audiences. Totally. But even that, all of your contacts won't match. You know, there's always a margin of error in terms of the match rates for those contacts. But all these remarketing audiences that you build through the platforms is all considered first party data to that social platform. So to LinkedIn, to Facebook. So that means your deliverability will be much greater and it's not contingent on third party cookies. I honestly feel like the playbook in the future, which is kind of what we see moving towards, is creating epic content, getting as many people to consume it, optimizing that. And when you do that process, you're essentially creating influence at scale at a discount. Like you're manufacturing celebrity when you really think about it. It's like mind-blowing, you know, in terms of, you know, you can penetrate a market, you can position yourself as a thought leader, you can basically do media arbitrage to make sure that you're getting maximum distribution for the lowest cost. And then at that point, it's just a matter of like inputs and outputs in terms of optimizing quality and listening to engagement signals, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a new take. I haven't heard that one. But that's always a good thing. But I mean, it makes a ton of sense if you're getting people to watch a YouTube video that's 24 minutes. I don't think I've ever spent 24 minutes with a piece of gated content or any book. Definitely not 24. Don't think I have. One thing that I'd love to dig into, and we can get into this later, but just other types of audiences that people could be thinking about, because you're right, email is tough. It's getting tougher. I mean, even for me, we have a newsletter that goes out to around, I think it's like 20-something thousand marketers, but the amount of bounce backs I'm getting now from, oh, I don't work here anymore because I obviously have a new job. Almost everyone in marketing and B2B does. So that email kind of useless to me now. With gated and other tools like that coming in, getting about 5% of our emails are just completely not even making it to people's inboxes. So getting tougher out there for email marketers.
That's a good point too. I mean, when you factor in the amount that are work emails and the attrition of those work emails, mm-hmm. so people, you know, they find new jobs. That's also too, when it comes to audience building and building your database, there could be an argument in terms of putting more weight on the value of the personal email versus the work email. Mm-hmm. And I know when you look at conversion rates, typically people opt in with the work email will convert into an opportunity sooner, which makes sense because they're still employed, right, at that company, mm-hmm. and they have a need that they're trying to solve. But I get, at the end of the day, it's kind of like, what is the stage you're focusing on? What is the outcome you're trying to drive? And then how you measure it differs, which is kind of like mm-hmm. the second hot take is most people, when they do strategy planning, especially with paid media, they'll do tofu, mofu, bofu. And that's fine as a starting point. But if you really want to take it to the next level, I highly recommend that you create some more granularity. So the way I like to do it, because I call it the five stages. So it's create, capture, accelerate, revive, expand. That's for sales-led companies. If you're a product-led company, instead of accelerate, it's activate. So like activating free trial users and trying to get them to, you know, become paid. And that allows you to see all of the different areas that you can have an actual impact from a marketing perspective, specifically from your paid campaigns. And then you can build that full funnel orchestration. So that way you're reaching people throughout that whole process. Versus if it's just tofu, mofu, bofu, it's like you're probably not going to be thinking about revival campaigns and getting closed loss ops back into the fold. Probably not going to be thinking about acceleration. You're definitely not going to be thinking about expansion. So like all these other stages that your dollars could be going to in terms of driving more return in the short term, you know?
And you recently, I mean, you were at Metadata doing all kinds of things. You had your hands in a lot. But in your experience looking at a ton of customer accounts, were most B2B companies still doing just that tofu, mofu, bofu, and kind of moving on with just those three stages? Is that what you were seeing?
Yeah, it was mainly tofu, mofu, bofu, or this is actually super timely. I audited 60 LinkedIn accounts. I'm doing this post on LinkedIn soon about like, what is the ultimate campaign group structure? Because I was genuinely curious. And it was like a big part of it was like tofu, mofu, bofu, or people would just break it out based on region and account list. Yep. That was another one that was really common. Or it'll be like region offer. So like North America demo request as an example. But yeah, I would say those were like the most prevalent ones. There was very few people that I saw took it a step further, which I think is extremely valuable, is if you can segment by the region, the offer, the stage. So practically it'd be like North America, create, and then the level of awareness. So thinking about like, what's the level of awareness within that, the audience criteria that you're going after. So if you're going after like intent-based audiences, solution aware, and then doing the offer / persona. So it could be like demo product managers, if I'm going after product managers, that's an example. Mm-hmm. And then that makes your life really easy, especially for LinkedIn specifically, because reporting out of LinkedIn natively is so painful. It's probably the worst of all of the platforms for reporting. So by being a little bit more granular and having better segmentation, it's going to really set yourself up for success to make it really easy to distribute budgets and then report on performance just at the campaign group level.
I think breaking that down in theory, it always sounds great to me to be so segmented because then obviously you can get targeted with your content, with your ads. But one thing that I hear a lot and I've run into myself is for B2B, our audiences aren't always as big or as we want them to be. So it's often we do all that work and then realize, oh, there's 50 people in this audience. So is this even worth my time, my budget?
Yep.
How would you recommend people approach that? Is there other audiences that maybe they're not thinking about that you've seen?
The first thing I always recommend is to play around with the audiences. Upload your contact list, your account list that you're going after, and just start to play around with the audience combinations so that you can prove and validate there is something here for us to work with. Because to your point, sometimes it is too few and then it doesn't make sense. For example, with one company right now that I'm talking to, they really wanted to do closed lost campaigns, but which I guess is a good problem. They don't have a lot of closed lost deals in their CRM that we could pull from, at least not enough to meet LinkedIn's minimums. Mm-hmm. So for us, we're going to do it in the future, you know, when that accumulates over time. But for right now, it's not a main priority.
We ran into almost the exact same thing. We wanted to do closed lost retargeting based on the lost reason, which makes sense in theory. But then we found out that field wasn't being used accurately. So it would have been kind of a mess anyway. Yeah. And yeah, so really you have to make sure that the data is real and legit
And then taking it a step further, right? In the sense of like, you can't segment that granularly, then go back one layer. So if you can't do, you know, all closed loss opportunities based on a disposition reason, for example, that's like super granular. So people who close loss due to, you know, timing or price, whatever it might be, if you have that in your CRM, take it a step back. Okay, can you just do all closed loss ops? right? And then is that large mm-hmm. enough? Because that's still better than nothing at all.
Right. It's better than having nothing in front of that group that obviously was qualified at some point mm-hmm. or another. That totally makes sense. So I'd love to dig into, I know you have this brand new role that you've kind of spun up for yourself. So how has that been going and what has surprised you about digging into client accounts again?
Yeah, it's been awesome. Consulting again. I was consulting before Metadata, but being back at it now, it's been great just to really work closely and like dive into the ads manager and be doing the day-to-day optimization. And I think what surprised me the most with the clients that I'm working with right now, a lot of people will come to me and they'll say, I'll give you a perfect example. Like one client that I started working with about a month ago, they came to me and they said, we're running Google ads, but performance is declining month over month. And we've kind of done everything that we can. We're not sure if that channel works for us. So we're going to go and move on to this next thing. Like a lot of B2B marketers have a tendency to fall into the trap of what I call checking boxes, where mm-hmm. they're just like, okay, you know, we all kind of know the things, like the same tactics. There's really nothing truly novel. There are a couple of things, but it's nothing like, you know, earth shattering. We all kind of know what to do for the most part in terms of what you hear out there, but it's not the what, it's the how. It's the level of the execution. You know what I mean? It's sweating the small things, like just giving a really tactical, practical example. It's like, when you set up Google search campaigns, the way you structure your campaigns and then being, you know, taking it a step further and creating like unique image extensions by campaigns, like things like this are what makes the true difference. Like it's like all those accumulated details that allow you to have that success. Optimizing your landing pages and making sure that, you know, your landing page passes the 5-second test. I can land on your landing page and in 5 seconds without scrolling down, I can understand what you do, why you do it, what's the next step. Simple things like this, I think, surprises me that the fundamentals is usually what most B2B companies get wrong, which I don't know why I'm surprised, but I guess I always wake up one day and I'm like, all right, the fundamentals, we're going to get it. You know, it's going to mm-hmm. be more of a table stakes, but it's really not. It's not. I think we're almost too smart for our own good. We're like, we need to do this super retargeting strategy and we have to, you know, create this messaging for this. And it's like, okay, great. But are you doing steps 1, 2, 3 first before you start worrying about steps 4 to 6?
Yeah. I mean, I think at least in my personal experience, we just have so much FOMO of what other marketers are doing. And we want to be doing the new shiny thing, right? Like we wanted to be running retargeting based on video views of 6 different video ads and sending them to custom pages, but that landing page hadn't had one conversion yet. So maybe we should probably.
I always say you cannot scale complicated. A lot of what I do when I start working with clients is addition through subtraction. A lot of what I'm doing is just, I call it cleaning. From like a very practical example of the Google ad account, cleaning the account or the Facebook ads, the LinkedIn ads, you name the channel, just cleaning the account, regrouping the structure, the campaigns, simplifying things so that way we can pull insights easier from a reporting perspective. Do we have reporting? Do we have tracking in place? Do we have dashboards? So I think a lot of times, for sure, it's FOMO, absolutely. You know, you hear TikTok is a new channel, we need to get on that, etc. And there's definitely value in all these channels, especially primarily if your audience hangs out there. But you just have to have a real honest conversation with yourself, especially now where, you know, resources are constrained and there's a lot of things going on from a budget perspective. I think being honest with yourself and being okay with doubling down on what's working and making that better before you start to tackle on new things and add it to your plate is going to help you get further ahead in the short term. Sometimes you have to take those 2 steps back in order to move 3 steps forward, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. Especially now, marketers are getting, I mean, at least from experience and who I'm talking to, just more pressure to make things work before trying new things, which last year I felt like it was all about like, we have to be everywhere. We have to be trying every new channel, every new community. We want to be in there. Yeah. And now it's really like, okay, let's get the basics right. Make sure that we're actually making money from these channels and scale from there.
The biggest gap that I see bar none with most B2B organizations is everyone from specifically for paid ads is no one really has a paid media program. They just have a lot of campaigns that they're running. They're very tactic focused. They haven't taken a step back and actually built out the whole program where you know, you think about like paid media strategy, that thing is the biggest gap in terms of like skill deficit that I'm seeing. And everybody is just, they're executing Google ads, they're executing LinkedIn ads, but everything is very siloed. They don't have an overall framework from a strategic perspective, right? Maybe as simple as like what I outlined. They don't have consistent campaign groups or naming conventions that are relevant across channels. They don't have the program visibility to measure what's working, what's not. They don't have an experimentation framework in place to be able to build on their learnings and to create like that environment of testing. And super shameless plug, but this is literally why I'm my first course that I'm launching, because I'm in the process right now of transforming Ad Conversion, which is a newsletter, into a digital advertising academy. And the first course that I'm launching is all about this one topic, which is building a paid media program. Because it's like, this is the cart before the horse, but it's so foundational because this makes everything else easier, you know, when done right. And even the performance marketers listening to this, not just the demand gen managers, a lot of performance marketers, they think too small. They just think in terms of Google, or they just think in terms of LinkedIn, or they just think in terms of Facebook or whatever you name the channel, but they don't see the big picture. So by starting with the program level and mapping that out, that makes the execution at the campaign level a lot easier.
And why do you think those silos exist now? Is it just, oh, paid search is someone else's job, so I'm going to focus on LinkedIn? Or is there another kind of stress causing that?
I think it's definitely specialized work. You know, a lot of times, I mean, when I first started out and paid, like I was the Google Ads guy, and all I did was Google Ads. And then, you know, a lot of teams, the way they structure it is like they'll have a Google Ads person, they'll have a paid social person. But I honestly think a lot of it is just, we just don't know what we don't know. It's like lack of, no one's really teaching this, you know what I mean? At least at like a program level, it's very, like most courses you come across, it's like how to scale Google Ads or how to launch LinkedIn ads or YouTube ads or whatever, but no one's telling you how do you connect everything.
Yeah, I think I'm in a different position because I've always been kind of a team of one. So I haven't had the luxury of saying, oh, that's someone else's job, but I could definitely see how teams get built out that way, where they're hiring someone to own YouTube and scale that, someone else to scale LinkedIn. So when you're working with a new customer, what metrics are they looking to get help with? Is it they want to drive more pipeline? Is it cost per lead? What do they typically come to you with?
Yeah, every B2B company, for the most part, it's pipeline and revenue. And if you have to summarize it into two things. And the first thing that we do is we start with an audit, which is, if I have a secret hack of like, what is the one thing that you do that allows you to find repeatable success, is I do an audit. You can't fix what you can't see, right? And that's half the battle. I learned this lesson the hard way. One of my first jobs out of college, I was running Google ads, like all the paid search for this like chain of gyms here in the US. It's like a Planet Fitness competitor. And I made a bunch of changes to the Google Ads account really quickly. I was like really excited. I'm like, oh, I see all these different areas of opportunity where we can improve. And I made all these changes. And I remember the first week, the cost per acquisition was the lowest it had ever been in company history. And I remember my manager coming to me and just being like, oh my God, what have I been doing? Like, this is amazing. Like, you're killing it. And then fast forward to the second week, the performance just like dropped off a cliff and it never recovered. So I learned from that experience, always measure twice, cut once. Like, make sure you run the audit, you analyze, you know, what's your budget allocation based on campaign type, campaign theme. So how much budget is going towards, for example, non-brand versus brand versus competitive. A big trap people fall into as well is they just put too much money on brand. And that's where Google Ads gets a bad rap, because you're just capturing people that were already going to convert. Ideally, you know, 70% of your budget should be on driving net new acquisition through search. And running through that audit is super helpful. So just looking at what's your budget allocation, what are the offers that you're running? So whether it's LinkedIn, Google, Facebook, I'm always looking at the distribution by region, the distribution by offer in terms of performance, the ads. What's the distribution by ads? Are you just using single image and carousel? You know, low hanging fruit for you might be to start to weave in conversation ads, Document Ads is a new one that's having a lot of success recently. So just looking at the allocation by theme, by offer, and by region is really helpful. If you just look at those three variables, it'll give you a lot of clarity and context on what levers you need to pull or what you need to work on in terms of your accounts.
And is there any consistencies you're seeing in terms of things that accounts are just missing or getting wrong? I know you already talked about the different stages, but is it maybe they're spending in a certain geo that they shouldn't be?
I think the biggest one that I see is lack of tracking. So most folks, they'll have on the one extreme, no tracking at all, or in like sort of the middle ground is they have tracking in place, conversion tracking, but they have way too many conversion actions associated to their different campaigns. And it's just very noisy. I have one client that I'm working with right now that last month they had 20,000 total registered conversions to their account.
Wow.
And their goal is like less than 4,000. So there's no way that's real. You know what I mean? I mean, they would be, everybody would be getting promoted like six times over. So
yeah, that sounds great.
So that's one big trap is you need to reduce the noise. Again, you cannot scale complicated, right? Like go fundamentally clean house. What are the 1 to 3 primary conversion actions that you really want to train these campaign algorithms to optimize towards? I think we forget like how powerful these platforms are in terms of the machine learning and the, you know, the AI behind the scenes. And what you need to do as a marketer is, outside of setting your audience parameters, is you need to feed as much high quality conversion data and train those algorithms how to bid and optimize for you if you're leveraging automated bid strategies, because it's all on them in terms of the auctions that they want to apply to, try to bid for. And by you training these algorithms with high quality conversion data, you can train them to bid more aggressively for the conversions that matter. So practically, what does that look like is, if you have 3 different conversion actions, whatever they might be, let's just say lead, MQL, SQL, you can put $1 per lead on the conversion value, $2 for an MQL, $3 for an SQL. That gives LinkedIn, Google, name the channel, some sort of understanding that, hey, an MQL is more important than a lead. I should bid more aggressively for people based on their audience attributes, their browser activity, all these different characteristics that they have behind the scenes, to bid more aggressively and to win that auction so I can show up for these people that I think are more likely, based on my predictive algorithm, to become an MQL. So I think that's another big miss, is we don't have the right tracking in place, or we have too much of it and it's just too noisy. But in a perfect world, I would say, especially now it's becoming more normalized, is to start tracking server to server offline conversions versus using these pixels, especially with everything that happens on the client side with the browser. Tracking by the pixel, even if you debug it through Google Tag Manager and you triple checked and it's perfect, you're still going to have irregularities in terms of your conversion counts natively versus what you see on your CRM, because it's just the nature of the browser, cross-device tracking. There's a lot of limitations and fragmentation. So the most accurate thing you can do in terms of putting yourself up for success is to track server to server, because you're closing the gap between your CRM, which will always be the source of truth for the business, and the platform. And every time an event is registered in your CRM, you can trigger that as a signal that fires back into the platform that it gets registered as a conversion. So that way the platforms learn, and they're learning from your source of truth, right? So you're reducing that proximity.
Yeah, I love that. So you talked a little bit about how smart these algorithms are, but they don't know what an op is worth to you. They don't know that an op is better than an MQL. So making sure that that's really spelled out for the platform. And
one of the things that I did at Metadata was I helped build our AI. I worked with our data science team. And I'm telling you, from behind the scenes, actually seeing this thing, it's just a formula. They don't know. It's just a formula. So it's like, you need to tell it what matters to you. It's extremely powerful and it's extremely smart, but it is literally just a math equation. And you need to make sure that you're feeding it the right inputs.
Right. And as a demand gen marketer, you should have access to your CRM. You should know this data. If you don't, you could definitely get some help internally from your ops team probably. But again, the algorithms can't see that data that you have access to.
So I always say like just bare minimum, just $1, $2, $3, $4. Like keep it as simple as that. If you know the custom deal amounts and you can be more advanced, but if you can figure out like the custom deal amounts and associate it, even better. But just keeping it as simple as like 1, 2, 3, 4 is more than enough to get started and find much more success.
On the success side, you mentioned that document ads on LinkedIn are something that people are trying now. It seems to be working for some of your customers. Is there anything else that you've noticed in the last couple of months is really emerging as a new, could be a tactic or new channel?
Yes, two things that come to mind. Number one, actually, I guess three. Number one is how much low-hanging fruit there is in terms of acceleration campaigns. So for example, one thing that's awesome on the acceleration side, and again, if you do have the audience size, is you can ask your CSMs to basically do a video of them talking about what it's like being a customer, and you can promote that to open opportunities. So it's kind of, you know, as they're browsing through LinkedIn, they can see that. The other one too that's really powerful is if you can create a list of all the common objections that you have, and then your product marketing team can create collateral based on those objections to kind of help answer those concerns. You can then push that into the acceleration campaigns. So as they're going through the sales process, they're talking to your team, they're getting served ads that are ideally preemptively answering their objections outside of the sales call. So that's a really low-hanging fruit in terms of helping improve the average time to close that I'm seeing. And it's really cheap because that audience size is pretty small for the most part. And it's just helping, again, like with less resources to further expand your impact. And then another one is Twitter ads. Not a lot of folks are advertising on Twitter. It's not as mainstream, but especially with everything that's happening with Elon Musk taking over and a lot of big brands pulling media budget, Twitter was always cheap, even before this. But now with Elon taking over, a lot of these big brands that saturate the CPMs and they're buying up all the inventory, a lot of them pulled out, which unfortunately like has yielded into like layoffs and a lot of bad things internally at Twitter. But for advertisers, it's definitely an opportunity in terms of reduced media costs. So if you haven't joined Twitter, highly recommend it. I mean, just to give some context, you can get CPMs as low as $3, for certain campaigns. So it's so cheap, especially if you run video views campaigns and you have success there. There's a lot you can do on the Twitter side. They accept customer lists, so you can upload customer lists onto Twitter. And at the bare minimum, what I always recommend people do, you're just starting out with Twitter, is retargeting, and you can expand your reach through Twitter on retargeting. And the really cool thing about Twitter specifically, and I'm totally nerding out here, is
I love it.
Twitter allows you to retarget based on impression count. So most platforms only allow you to retarget based on engagement. So somebody who clicked your ad, somebody who liked your ad, et cetera. Twitter allows you to retarget people who just saw your ad, that were served an impression. So the ability to create a retargeting audience on Twitter is pretty insane. The other one that is like this, that not a lot of people are using, is probably one of my favorites, is YouTube. With YouTube, you can also retarget people who viewed your ads or watched certain videos on your YouTube channel or subscribed to your YouTube channel. So YouTube is also a huge opportunity. I think the biggest challenge of why folks don't get started on Twitter, they don't get started on YouTube, which is what I always call like the targeting handcuffs. For lack of a better word, we're spoiled. You know, as B2B marketers, we're spoiled in the sense of we are so used to LinkedIn targeting, hyper small audiences, third-party account list that we source, you know, all these things. And we're spoiled where we're thinking in the sense of like, if we can't have absolute clarity and granularity on the audiences that we want to go after, then we're not even going to bother. And what I want to remind these folks is, how do you think advertisers used to market before the internet? Like, how do you think they were able to get in front of their ICP? Like, the most extreme example I always use is Claude Hopkins, who invented the coupon. Like, I can imagine Claude Hopkins in the 1800s sitting at his desk, preparing his campaign. He sends his campaign out. He has to wait months to collect the data. The audience targeting is like the whole city or the town. You know what I mean? There's no segmentation. How was he able to find success and actually get in front of his ICP? It's very simple. It's something that we've been doing since the dawn of time. It's your messaging, your ad. Ads themselves, the message of the ad can act as a filtering mechanism where the best ads, they attract the right person and they filter out and they exclude the wrong person. If your ad is attractive to everybody, then it's really attractive to nobody because it should only speak to that specific person that you want to bring in, to pull in, and then everybody else should be repulsed by it. And they just walk away, they filter, they scroll through, et cetera. So when it comes to getting started on these broader channels where you have less, and there are things you could do on YouTube to improve your quality of targeting, but still it's not going to be like LinkedIn. This is where the video creative itself is essential to your success, because it does need to have these different elements in place to be able to act as that mechanism.
And to your point, a lot of B2B marketers haven't touched Twitter, especially on the paid side. But what type of content are you seeing that's working there? Because it's a bit of a, I don't want to say scary, but it's just a brand new channel for a lot of B2B marketers.
Yeah, I recommend that you just start with your best content that's performing on Facebook and replicate on Twitter. That's a starting point. That's always what I recommend, because it's a data-informed decision. Generally speaking, video works really well on Twitter just because of the really cheap costs. You can get a lot of video consumption pretty cheap. But with Twitter, one of the things that I will say is people are more vocal. So don't be surprised if you get trolls and bots that are commenting on your ads. It's actually better now. In the past 3 months, I've seen less bot comments compared to Twitter ads before Elon. It used to be pretty aggressive, where like you would get spam in comments from bots. And it hasn't been as bad. Now it's like maybe like one or two, you know, every like 25,000 impressions or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. We ran a small, it was very small, because to your point, we got overwhelmed by bot replies when I ran this test, I think early last year. And I just quickly paused it because I was like, I don't trust this audience at all. I'm doing something wrong here. So it might be worth revisiting.
I ran this test with my newsletter where I ran the same thing on TikTok, because when I first started advertising on TikTok in January of last year, I was super skeptical. I was like, there's no B2B marketers here. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's kids, et cetera. And I ran this test where I basically set up a custom lead gen form, and it was to sign up for my newsletter, and they had to put in their job title, their name. And I think that was it. I'm not sure if I, I put your job title, your name, and then are you a B2B marketer? Yes or no. And it was like a little checkbox, and they had to put yes or no. And this is TikTok. There's no pre-filled information. So you talk about user experience, awful, right? But I wanted to run this test and be extra, you know, specific, just to see like, what do I get back? Long story short, it was pretty remarkable. I mean, I got titles. I did get some like weird titles. Like I got somebody put queen, like toad wrangler, like just all these strange titles. But then I also got some legit ones as well, like senior demand gen manager, CMO. I also got sales related titles, even though I was going after marketing people. And I was targeting the broadest of audiences. It was literally like people interested in marketing and advertising, you know, but it goes back to my video itself. The first thing I did in the video was I called on my ICP. I'm like, hey, if you're a B2B marketer looking to learn how to scale pipeline and revenue with paid ads. And then, you know, I kind of went into my pitch. So the same is true on YouTube. Like the script is the most important part foundationally of any video ad success when you're going to use the video ad for prospecting.
Yeah, I like that. So starting with, if you're not sure about the audience yet on these channels, starting with that call out to almost disqualify people from continuing if they're not in your ICP, that makes a ton of sense.
Yep. And you can do it directly or indirectly, right? So directly is like you legit call them out, you know, hey, if you're a B2B marketer, da 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 da. Or indirectly is you can call out an experience that only they would know. So for example, you can start the ad like, there's nothing like when your pipeline target gets increased 3 times in the same year and your budget got cut by 40%. Am I right? Very specific person's going to be like, oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So this is like the ways you can manufacture it.
Yeah, I'm sure other people would be like, I don't know what pipeline is.
You're like,
you lost me.
Yeah, and that's totally fine, especially with YouTube, because you don't pay unless they watch 30 seconds of your ad.
Cool. So on the flip side of new channels, obviously people are making some tough cuts and tough decisions on programs right now. Do you have kind of a set parameter that you use or a set framework to help people decide what should we pause, what should we cut? At least for now, maybe we'll revisit soon, but what are the low-hanging fruit that we should be cutting today?
I think the most simplest way to get started is look at all of your paid campaigns that you are able to attribute. So specifically, we're talking about campaigns that are driving people to a direct, you know, demo request, free trial. So think things like Google, paid review, LinkedIn remarketing, combo ads, things like that. I would say number one is look at the contribution, the pipeline to spend contribution, and see, you know, what is the efficiency there? And then as well, revenue, of course, your return on investment based on each campaign, and use that as a starting point. But before you make the decision of should I completely pause this thing or not, is go back to the fundamentals with an honest look and like really assess that campaign and see, is this campaign not working because we truly gave it our like a best go and it just didn't work, right? Like that's part of the process. Or is it because maybe there's an opportunity to refine and filter this campaign and optimize it some more so that it can, you know, produce what we're looking for. So for example, with Google search, I had a client of mine that was doing non-branded competitive terms. They were running it for a while, really was not profitable for them in terms of not even revenue, just like pipeline creation. And long story short, we looked at the campaign, we looked at the search terms, and they thought they were bidding on high intent keywords. The reality was they were paying for really irrelevant searches. So they're not even actually getting in front of the people they thought they were getting in front of. So in this case, it was a fault of execution, not necessarily the strategy behind it and like the what we wanted to do with that thought process. So I would say, think through those things. If it is the case that, you know, you did implement it to the best of your knowledge and you kind of checked the primary boxes, then from there, you do have to kill your darlings. It's very hard. It's very easy to pause something that just didn't work. It didn't give you anything. A lot harder to pause something that generated some contacts, generated some opportunities, but never really closed into revenue. And for those things, you're probably going to have to be more strict, especially right now due to budget restraints, and pause those campaigns and just get more refined and more granular so that you can stretch budget even more. So like another really tactical thing that people can take away from this is for paid search, specifically, if your budgets got cut, one little thing you can do versus having to pause everything first is instead of showing your ads 7 days a week, show your ads Monday through Friday. That'll allow you further consolidate your budget, stretch it further. So kind of thinking in terms of order operations, like number one is what is the impact towards pipeline and revenue? Number two, how is the execution? Are we actually doing what we think we're doing? It sounds so stupid to say it, but you'd be shocked. And then third, it's like, okay, was the premise here, the hypothesis flawed, right? Did it really truly not convert? Or was it a lack of how we set up the experiment? And then from there, it's kind of like, how can we further stretch every dollar? So that usually means not casting a wider net, it's casting a smaller net. So thinking through, okay, if you're targeting all of North America, well, maybe only 30 states in the US are actually profitable for you and the rest are junk. So I kind of think of all these things as like your optimization levers, and you're kind of looking for the gold within the dirt. And it's like the locations, the ad schedule, the devices, the audience parameters, the ad types. These are all things that you can pull on to further improve your efficiencies and just cut cost.
Yeah, the timing is a really interesting one because I could see how rather than running out of budget and not having ads running for the whole last week of the month, turning off weekends, it just makes so much sense to conserve that budget.
And again, I'm always like a test until proven otherwise. You know, the one thing I know for sure is I know nothing, because what I think works for one account doesn't work for another. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work for, you know, there are parallels and similarities, but at the end of the day, look at your data. You know, this is one of my favorite things about paid media, and I'm going to sound like such a nerd, but I love this stuff, is your account is telling you a story and it's communicating through the metrics. So it's all about understanding how to interpret the metrics to read the story that your account is trying to tell you. For the most part with paid media, and especially if you have conversion tracking set up, like you're never truly blind. There's always like an indicator. And there's something that you can pull on that thread to understand and kind of get back down to the first core principle of what's going on here. So just like practically speaking, let's say your ad is not showing up on the top of Google. That's the big problem that you're facing. If you understand that your ad rank is calculated based on your max cost per click bid, your quality score, and your expected impact of ad extensions, now you can drill down a little bit further. And those are the three components for you to further dive into. So then from there, it's like, if it's bidding related, what's your bid strategy? Is it automated? Is it manual? If it's automated, maybe you have a bid cap that's hurting you. If you're using target CPA, maybe your cost cap is too low. Can we increase that? Will that help improve ad rank and visibility? on the quality score side, it's like expected impact or ad relevance, landing page experience, expected click-through rate. Which one is hurting our quality score overall? If it's ad relevance, then there's an issue in terms of how we're structuring our ad groups and our keywords and our ads. If it's landing page experience, we don't have relevant landing pages. If it's expected click-through rate, it could be the segmentation of our campaigns. So it's kind of like, there's like this, like within every level, there's a level. And it's all about understanding how to pull the threads. If you take anything away from this conversation, when you look at your campaigns, don't just stop at the highest level. Like, don't just look at the total campaign, the total cost, the contribution, and then roll up your sleeves and walk away. Take a second to like dig deeper, because at the outset, you might have a campaign that looks awful, but then you drill down to the ad level and you have one ad that is absolutely crushing it. So instead of you pausing the entire campaign, maybe you pause all of the other ads, but the one that was actually doing well. So that's one thing, like, I think a lot of folks that they're wrong is they don't understand how to do that analysis and just kind of drill down a little bit further, because there's always something to learn from every campaign.
Yeah, one that you brought up, one silo that I've seen in my own experience here at Chili Piper is the landing page conversion. So it's one area that I don't own, which is kind of rare in my role. But we did the same thing. We looked into devices and found, especially on our competitive campaigns, we had zero conversions on mobile. So it was a very easy, like, let's just pause this, put all the money towards desktop, and then right away our conversions went up and everything is looking more solid on the exact same spend. We didn't have to move money around. It was just pausing that one thing.
Yep. It's like all that inefficiency, you know, like that's kind of what
we were just throwing money away basically.
And that's kind of what I refer to as like finding the gold within the dirt. Like the gold is like those little segments that are doing really well. And the dirt is just like all that wasted spend around it. It's like almost like if you're, you know, you're trying to like actually dig up gold and you're there, like shifting the dirt off, like all that is like the wasted spend. You're just trying to find what are these things that. Now the trap though, I will say, because anything in excess is bad. The trap though is that you get too segmented, too granular. Yeah, your return is amazing, but you have no scale. So this is where it's a balancing act. And this is also too where it's really helpful to just run experiments. So for example, most tools allow you to do A/B testing. So you can say, all right, your initial structure versus the new structure, and then run an A/B test and see what is the impact on volume, but also, you know, your efficiency in terms of cost. And then what I always recommend to you really practically is if you do find some cool insight, like in your case, you're like, desktop is much better, break it out to its own campaign and then just pause the original campaign. So that way you can always, worst case if you need to, turn the old campaign back on if you need it. Never, ever, ever, ever remove campaigns. Like ever. Because once you remove the campaign, it's gone. A Google account rep can't restore it for you. The same is true across most channels. So just get in the habit of pausing versus removing. I learned that one the hard way.
So looking ahead to the future, maybe the rest of this year, I think I know the answer to this, but what's something new that you're working on that you're excited about?
I'm so pumped to launch my academy. So ad conversion, I've transformed it, like I mentioned, from a newsletter to a digital advertising academy that teaches B2B marketers how to scale paid ads for free, regardless of skill level. And what really excites me about it is not that it's an academy, but it's how I'm building the academy. So for example, I truly believe online education is flawed in terms of the current setup. So most academies, the way they approach course production is they choose a topic, they keep it as broad as possible. They stuff as much information as they can. They sell it to as many people as they can to maximize profits. And then the outcome is like hundreds of courses, terrible course completion rates, students left with like surface level learnings. So for me, I'm like, okay, we're not doing that. And like, I have these five commitments that I created for students. It's kind of like our, what we stand for. And one of them is on-demand courses will always be free. So all of my on-demand courses are free. We don't make money by charging students for courses, because I truly believe courses are a means to an end. So instead, the way we're going to approach it is, number one, we keep it relevant to one niche. So we'll 100% exclusive to B2B. And then from there, we try to only limit. So one of the rules is no lesson longer than 10 minutes. So by default, we're thinking of how can we compress the 80-20? What is the most important stuff that you need to know? So that way the courses that are not 50 hours long. It's only 3 hours long, as an example. And then from there, we try to just focus on that one person, that one topic, keep it relevant to that one niche. And then we give it away for free so we can maximize impact and not profit. And we're really focused more so on like the learning experiences. So for now it's courses, but there is going to be like a SaaS component to it in the future as well, in terms of like simulations and things like that. So it's like a whole learning experience that's end to end. So how do you get somebody to go from literally a true beginner in a, you know, in paid media to becoming an expert? And then I've kind of mapped out like, what do those journeys look like?
That's super exciting. I'm excited to follow that along myself. And we'll definitely get the link for everyone who's listening. I'm sure a lot of you are interested in upping your game on the paid side, especially now with everything being scrutinized. So it's great timing to launch this. So moving on to our quick fire round, I know we're coming up on time here. Is there another marketer you follow that our listeners should go check out?
I'm going to give a shout out to Jan Berg from Cognizm. He is awesome. And he's been posting more content recently on LinkedIn. He runs all the paid media at Cognizm. So definitely recommend checking him out, especially now that he's posting more. And he has like a lot of great insights in terms of experiments that they're running. And he's a great person to follow.
Yeah, they're doing a ton of cool stuff on paid. And they seem really transparent about their experiments, which is always fun. Follow along. Is there an under the radar channel? We've covered a couple of channels, but maybe a new tactic that you're loving right now or that your customers are?
It's an old tactic, but we'll reframe it as new. So people have FOMO and then they can go do it. And that's improving your landing pages. Like really taking the time to optimize your landing pages. And on the new side, one thing that is really cool to see, and I was super skeptical about this, but it actually is having a great impact, is personalization. So if you can have a strong landing page and then you can use a third-party tool, I don't want to name drop any tools, but you can Google them and essentially they can personalize your page in real time based on like different parameters. So you can serve up different headlines based on the UTM source, certain keywords, things like that. That's all little things that you can do to further improve your boost your conversion rate. And it has been pretty significant as well. You can also dynamically change the language of your landing pages. That's been a really cool use case. So running different international campaigns for different geos, instead of having to create multiple pages, you can just dynamically personalize the content based on the person and where they're coming from. But you don't need that to get started. I'm always like a huge proponent of like foundations first, tech later. If you could just follow best practices and make sure that you remove navigation above the fold, you remove the footer, you have one primary call to action throughout the page, things like this, you'll find more success from your existing stuff.
Yeah, so start with the basics, but there are a ton of shiny personalization tools out there to explore if you're ready to move on.
100%.
Great. And lastly, where can we go to find out more about you? I know you're on YouTube, LinkedIn.
Yeah, you can check me out on LinkedIn. I have a YouTube channel. Just search my name, Silvio Perez. I have over 50 plus video tutorials on advertising. And if you want to follow along, especially with all this stuff with the Academy and my newsletter, just go to atconversion.com and subscribe, and then you'll be updated with everything that comes out.
Awesome. We'll add all those links in the show notes as well so everyone can come find you. Thanks so much, Silvio, for your time. This was great.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Demand Gen Chat. Demand Gen Chat is a Chili Piper podcast hosted by Tara Robertson and produced by me, Nola McCoy. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It only takes 5 seconds and helps other marketers like you discover Demand Gen Chat. Also, if you'd like to have a question answered in a future episode, you can connect with Tara Robertson on LinkedIn. Send her a DM with your question and it could be answered on a future episode. Finally, if you've gotten this far and are wondering what Chili Piper even is, Chili Piper helps B2B marketers book more qualified meetings for their sales teams. You can't afford to leave opportunities on the table, so let your lead self-qualify and schedule a time with the right rep instantly. And that's just one of the many revenue-impacting things that Chili Piper does. Visit chilipiper.com to learn more. And thanks again for listening. We'll see you on the next episode of Demand Gen Chat.